Okay, so this is our Sunday morning speaker meeting. This is how we wind up the roundup. The guy who's speaking this morning came a long way. He just moved from Flagstaff to Visalia, California, with his wife and baby daughter. And then he had this commitment to speak this morning, so he came all the way back here. Like after a week of being in California. So thank you for that. For a time, I had a sponsor that I got when I was in jail, and then he fired me because I wasn't expressing enough willingness. Plus, his sponsor told him to. So I was working with this young man, and this is a guy that I got sober with in the rooms. So, you know, you might look at it as peers, but really, he in the reading we just had talks about a spiritual experience. And we try to carry this message to other alcoholics. And I was having a spiritual experience, or so I thought. And, well, I was. But I was working with this young man. And I'm a very needy sponsee. Very needy. And so I figured, why not ask Joseph? Why not? And so we did this deal for a couple of years, two and a half years or so. And thank you. So enlarge my spiritual life. And this is this traditionally the spiritual talk, whatever, speaker meeting. Because I suppose because it's Sunday. And for many of you, that's your Sabbath. So without further ado, today he's going to share his experience, strength, and hope with us. Let's welcome Joseph.
Oh, God. Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
My name is Joseph, and I am an alcoholic.
Joseph, we're going to talk right into it.
Right into the microphone. Can you all hear me? I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be sober. My sobriety date is November the 26th of 2018. So I just celebrated 4 years at the end of last year. I have a sponsor. I work my steps. I fired all my sponsees because I moved. I have a home group and I have service commitments within that home group, and I talk to my higher power every day. And I don't say that to be like, oh, look at me, I'm Mr. AA, right? I do those things on a daily basis because that's what keeps me alive. So I'll start at the beginning. I was born cross-faded on enough benzos and alcohol to kill an adult. I was a stillbirth. I was resuscitated twice the day I was born. I was taken away by CPS that day, and I was with the foster family by the time I was 5 days old. And I didn't know that story growing up, right? I was adopted by that family when I was three, and I knew I was adopted, but I didn't know why. And so my whole life growing up, I thought my parents didn't want me. And if they didn't want me, nobody else was going to. And so my whole life, I had this internal dialogue of, I'm not good enough, and I need to make sure that you think that I am, and I'll be whatever you need me to be in order to be accepted by you. And I carried that for a long time. A very long time, up until I got sober this time. So I'll fast forward a bit, right? I was raised in a very religious, strict household, so I had resentments against God and resentments against religion. My first solution was smoking cigarettes. I started smoking when I was 12. My second solution was cutting myself. I started doing that when I was 15. My third solution was women. And none of those things did the trick for me, right? Like, they were a little bit okay, and they made me feel a little bit better. And then when I turned 17, I started drinking. And drinking got me to a place that nothing ever had before in my entire life, right? I had arrived. I remember taking my first drink, and I was at this party, and I didn't know anybody there. I'm standing in the corner awkwardly, like, nervous and, like, teetering on my feet and like freaking out. And then somebody hands me a beer and I take a sip and I'm like, that was fucking disgusting. And then they handed me a shot of tequila and I took that and I was like, that was way worse than the beer. So I'll stick with the beer. And then I woke up at home. So the first time I ever drank, I was 17 years old. I blacked out and I drove home and, I woke up the next morning and I was like, man, I'm going to do that again. And I'm going to do that every day for as long as I can. And so I did. I was living at my parents' house and I was sneaking out every night and stealing my dad's car and going and getting drunk and driving home drunk in my dad's car. And within a couple months of that, he found out that I was leaving his house every night and he said, you know, I'd rather be homeless than listen to your guys' rules anymore. And so at 17 years old, I left my parents' house and I started sleeping on the street because that sounded better because I could get loaded more. And I have a very 0 to 100 story, right? Within a year of starting to drink, I was a daily methamphetamine user. Within a couple months of that, I had been arrested many times and I had been put on probation and perfect timing, Zach, perfect timing. So I'm like 18 years old and I get put on probation. Maybe I was 19. I was very young. It was all within a couple years. And by the point that I had been put on probation, I was living in garages that didn't have heat, pissing in buckets in the corner. Like my life was miserable, completely unmanageable. And I was so oblivious to it, right? Because my solutions were still working. I didn't care what my external life looked like as long as I got what I needed, right? Nothing else mattered. I would steal from anybody, fuck over anybody. I did whatever I had to do to stay loaded. So I get arrested and I get put in this treatment program called Exodus in the county jail up here in Flagstaff. And it's a 3-month rehab that's in jail. So you can't just like walk out the front door. If you try to walk out, they like hit you with more charges. And so I get put in this treatment. I'm 19 years old and I'm sitting in there and I'm like, yeah, meth and heroin might be a problem, but like I'm not an alcoholic. You know, it's different. It's different. When I turn 21, I'll be able to drink successfully, I swear. Right. The great obsession of every alcoholic is to control and enjoy my drinking. And I didn't hear a thing that got said that first time I went through. And I say first time because I had to go back through. I didn't hear anything that was said. What I did hear was there are things that you have to do every day to stay sober. And I was like, well, I'll do them until I'm off probation. Right. So I got out of jail and I got a sponsor and I started half-assing my steps because I didn't have your problem. So I didn't really need your solution. I tried to do the steps without a higher power. I tried to do the steps my way, right? And I would pay lip service to everything my sponsor would tell me. I had a home group. I had service positions. I had all the things, right? But I wasn't actually doing any of it. I was just putting on a show. And I could sound really good in a meeting because my sponsor at the time is about the book. And he would take me through the book and he would teach me everything that he thought that he knew, right? And so I could sound really good in a meeting, right? I could share my story essentially the same way that I do now, but I didn't mean any of it. And I remember on that sponsor's 9th birthday, I was sitting in a trap house loaded and I texted him happy birthday. And then I went to a meeting that night and I didn't admit to anybody that I was loaded. And I picked up dirty chips for 6 months after that. And I remember I picked up my year chip, right? And I had maybe 6 months of sobriety and I pick up this year chip. And a friend of mine handed it to me and there was so much shame in that coin and there was so much guilt and so much regret. And I was too proud to admit it. Right. He handed me that coin. He gave me a hug. He told me he loved me. And I was like, well, I've been lying for 6 months. I can't start telling the truth now. And then I went to another meeting and picked it up again. Right. Because that's what we do. We show the newcomers that this thing works, even if you're lying about it. And another friend of mine patted me on the back at that meeting and said, you did it, buddy. You made it to a year. You're cured. And I was like, oh my God, you're right. So I stopped going to meetings. I stopped meeting with my sponsor. I stopped doing any of the things that were suggested, right? Because now I was cured. I had a whole year sober minus the, you know, relapse right in the middle of that. And very shortly thereafter, I thought it was a good idea to go save my ex from the trap house. For the record, it's a horrible idea. It came out of me. And, you know, within a couple months, I'm getting loaded again. Right. 0 to 100 real fast. I turned 21. I went to the casino to gamble. I did not do any gambling. I just wound up drunk and then driving drunk down the highway at 110 miles an hour in a 1993 Honda Accord that was shaking to get to the trap house. Right. Because that's where I go. that led on to a 4-month binge, and that it got worse. It got far, far worse, right? I needed more and more to get to the place that I needed to be. And so, you know, I'm still on probation. I didn't make it all the way through probation like was my plan. And so eventually I get rearrested and I get sent to this rehab in Phoenix. And I remember this rehab was co-ed, and that's pretty much all I remember about it. I didn't hear a word that was said. I didn't hear anything that was suggested because I had this sponsor who was about the book before, right? So I went into this rehab thinking I knew everything. The trick is self-knowledge avails me nothing, right? I can know all this shit and not do anything and go get high tomorrow. And that's been my experience, right? I understand this program very well and I can articulate it very well. The problem is if I don't do it, it does nothing for me, right? There's action to be taken. And so I go through this rehab, and the rehab was down in Phoenix, and every single person that I asked told me, oh, you should probably not move back to Flagstaff. Like, that's probably not a good idea for you. Even my probation officer was like, I've written all the paperwork to transfer your probation down to Maricopa County so you don't have to come back to Flagstaff. And so I completed this rehab program, and I moved back to Flagstaff because that was my idea. And I got up here and I got my old job back and I didn't go back to meetings and I didn't get a sponsor. And within a couple months, I was back at the casino to gamble again. And, again, I did no gambling. And again, I wound up driving 130 miles an hour down the freeway with my head cocked sideways and one eye closed so I could get to the trap house. And that led on to another heavy binge that got worse and worse and worse. And I remember towards the end of it, you know, I wasn't even getting to where I needed to be, right? There wasn't enough that I could put in my system to be okay with who I was. And that's all I ever wanted from alcohol, was to feel good enough. And I didn't anymore, right? And there was nothing that I could do. And eventually I get rearrested again, right? And I go back to Exodus, good old jail rehab. And I heard something in there that I didn't hear the first two times I was in rehab or the last year and a half that I had been in the rooms. And I heard that if when you start drinking, you can't stop. And if when stopped, you do not know when you're going to pick up again, you might be an alcoholic. And I heard that and I was like, yeah, but I'm too young to be an alcoholic because I know better. Right. I had two birthdays in the same jail cell in jail rehab and I knew better. And so I get out of jail and I finish probation and I think probation was the problem. So I go and I try some controlled drinking and I take the couple drinks, right? And there's so much shame and so much guilt and so much resentment towards myself. And I was like, I fucking did it again. And at this time I'd gotten a new sponsor and I was half-assing my steps again, right? He had me writing my fourth step, even though I didn't fully concede to my innermost self that I am an alcoholic and I had no conception of God whatsoever. And so I'm writing this fourth step and I get drunk and it doesn't work. And I'm still writing this fourth step and I start chairing this Heroin Anonymous meeting and I have less than 30 days sober and they're like, this will be a great spot for you. And then like 2 weeks later, I go pick up my 24-hour chip because I smoked weed because I thought maybe this one will work, right? And I was more depressed, more anxious, and I just couldn't really move. And I was laying on the couch, and it was really cold. And I'm still chairing this HA meeting, still writing a fourth step, right? Like almost a month goes by. I was almost at 30 days, and I thought, maybe meth will work again. And I remember going to the same trap house that I wound up at every single time I went to the casino, right? I go knock on the window because that's what tweakers do. We knock on windows. We don't use doors. And I knock on the window and I climb in the window and I get high and I'm sitting on the bed and I'm like really fucking suicidal, like more suicidal than I think I've ever been in my entire life. And I couldn't just sleep it off like I did with the weed and the alcohol. I just had to sit there with it. So much shame, so much guilt, so much self-resentment. And then I had to go to work and I worked at Taco Bell at the time. So I had to go open Taco Bell high on meth, which is probably standard for Taco Bell, honestly. And then I get off work and I go home and I go to sleep and I wake up and I call my sponsor and I'm like, dude, I fucking did it again, right? Because I've still been meeting with this guy every week and I've been honest with him the whole time except for the part where I'm not praying and I'm not believing in a higher power. And he's like, come to the meeting tonight. And I said, okay. And I get there and he said, you got your fourth step in your car? And I was like, shit, you fucking tricked me. And I said, yes, I do. And he said, cool, we're going to the coffee shop after this and you're going to read me that thing. And, you know, I'd worked a couple fourth steps, worked a couple fifth steps. Like, I knew what I was getting myself into, in theory. And we go to this coffee shop after the meeting, and I had at most 36 hours sober. At absolute most, I had 36 hours sober. And on my way to this coffee shop, I said my first real prayer to a God that I did not believe in. And I basically told God, if this doesn't work and I don't get sober right now, I'm going to fucking kill myself. I'm going to drive off the side of the highway over a cliff. Because I couldn't, I was at the jumping off place that the book talks about, right? I couldn't imagine my life continuing the way that it was going. And I had no idea what sobriety even looked like. And I got to this coffee shop and I started reading my fourth step, right? And it's all the same shit that I wrote on the first two other ones. Oh, I hate this person because they did this to me and here's my part and blah, blah, blah. And then we get through the whole thing and he goes, cool, what did you leave off? And for the first time, I actually told him the secrets that I left off. And I got rid of those things that I had been carrying with me for a long time. And since that day, drinking and drugs have not sounded like a viable solution to anything that I've faced in my life. Right? A God that I did not believe in that I asked for help showed up that day. And I can't explain that, right? I can't put into words, like I said at the beginning, right? When I do this shit, it fucking works. And so my first like 3 months of sobriety, I was so happy, right? I was actually working steps. I was actually, you know, doing meetings, being of service and working a full-time job. And I was like on that pink cloud. I was so genuinely happy for the first time in my life. I felt like I was enough for the first time in my life. And then I get some things back, right? Like I get the car, I get the attention of a girl and I'm like, okay, I think I'm cured again. And so I back off a little bit. And then I got really miserable in sobriety, right? Because I didn't have the attention of any women at one point. And I was like, oh, I need to fix that. And so someone that I used to use with hits me up and says, hey, I need some dick. And I was like, yo, I got one of those. I'm on my way. And on the way to this person's house, I shot out a prayer to a God that I still barely believed in. And I said, God, am I doing the right thing here? And God answered me with a resounding no. I was not doing the right thing, and I told God I know better, I'm going to do it anyway, and she got pregnant, and then a very good friend of mine told me, if God has a sense of humor, you're going to have a daughter, and then I had a beautiful baby girl, and this person that I had my daughter with is still actively using, right? After my daughter was born, she was in and out of trap houses, in and out of hotels, exposed to substances. And through all of that, right, so much fear, so much resentment. And what I learned how to do at that point, right, I had maybe a year and a half sober when my daughter was born. And through all of that, what I learned how to do was lean on God in the program. That was one of the most difficult times in my life. That's when I was suicidal in sobriety, right? I was actively working a program. I had a sponsor. I was working steps. I was active in this shit. And I wanted to kill myself. I didn't want to drink, right? Because I knew drinking wasn't going to solve anything. That problem had been removed from me. But I didn't want to live the life that I was living. I was so miserable. And so I went to my home group every Saturday and I cried for the whole meeting for an hour straight and told them that I wanted to kill myself, but I haven't done it. And at that time, there was maybe four of us coming to my home group, and those people showed up for me in a way that no one ever has in my entire life, right? Every week they listened to me cry, and every week they told me they loved me and they checked on me constantly. And then, you know, God shows up, right? And DCS takes my daughter away from her mother, and DCS places my daughter in my custody, and we start a custody case, right? And I'm granted full custody. And then she goes to prison. We don't have to deal with her anymore. And it's like, holy shit, we're free for now. And then they only give her like 2 years. And we're like, oh God, we got to deal with her really soon. And so what I did while she was in prison was I doubled down on my program, right? I hit more meetings. I got sponsees. I was working with Rich at the time. And he was really needy. So I only needed one sponsee. It was like having four. And, you know, through that time, as her outdate got closer, my fear grew, right? Because I didn't have enough trust in my higher power that it was going to be taken care of. And so I started to try to manipulate the situation to fit what I wanted it to do, right? And while I'm actively trying to manipulate things to fit my narrative, I become miserable in sobriety again. And so I sat down with my sponsor and we worked some steps about it. And he told me that I should ask God what to do. And I was like, oh, hey, that's a good idea. And so I asked God what to do, and things fell into place where I started a severance case. I started a case in the courts, right? Like, that's not me. And we started that case in August of last year, late August. And just this last month, early June of last year, we won that severance case. It cost me 9 months of sleep and almost $100,000, but I never have to deal with that person again while she's using, right? And that was by far, like, that was more difficult than my daughter being exposed to substances for me, because I thought I had moves every step of the way through court. I thought I had control every step of the way through court. And every step of the way, I was reminded that I have no moves and I have no control, right? I am powerless over people, places, things, and alcohol. I have no fucking moves when it comes to anything outside of myself. And so every step of the way, I got chin checked by God. And every step of the way, I learned how to lean on God in a different way. And every step of the way, God showed up, right? Every single court date that happened, I left. I came in resentful and I left feeling somewhat okay. And the last court date we had, right, it was in-person trial. And so me and my wife and my lawyer and both my parents show up for me. And it's my daughter's mother and her lawyer and her mom on the other side of the courtroom. And every time I had seen her in person since she got out of prison, my blood boiled and I was filled with rage. And this time we go to the courthouse, right? And we're all sitting there and she walks in and I'm okay. And that has not been my experience with this person so far, right? She sits down and I'm like, God's right here with me. I'm going to be all right. And every step of the way, it's been, every single step of the way, my sponsor points me to the same place in the book, right? Step four, the fear inventory. I ask myself, why do I have these fears? Isn't it because self-reliance fails me? And it does, right? Because I have no moves outside of what I, outside of myself that I can control, right? I can't manipulate you to do what I want you to do. I think I can sometimes, but it never works out that way, right? I step on the toes of my fellows and they retaliate. And, how am I doing on time? Oh, I got plenty of time. Ooh. Smashing this shit. And every step of the way, my sponsor points me to that passage, right? And he points me to the fear prayer. I ask God to remove my fear and direct me to what he would have me be. And every single time I say that prayer, somebody fucking calls me, right? Somebody calls me and asks for my help or asks for my opinion on something that has nothing to do with me. And I get to get out of self for a little bit. And I get to spend time with God and my fellows. I get to see what I can pack into the stream of life rather than what I can take from you and what I can get out of a situation. And now, you know, we just moved to California this week and it's terrifying. It is so fucking scary. I'm full of fear, right? And when we first started talking about California, I was meeting with my sponsor and I listed off a bunch of things of reasons why I didn't want to move, right? I was born and raised in Flagstaff. I've lived in Flagstaff my entire life. Except for when I ran away from my problems and when I went to rehab, like minus 5 months, I've spent everything in Flagstaff. And I was listing all these things, right? And he opened up the seventh step in the 12 and 12. And he says, the chief activator of our character defects has been self-centered fear. Fear we're going to lose what we have or not get what we want. And I'm terrified to lose what I have, right? I've spent the better part of the last 6 years building this fellowship in Flagstaff. With people that I'm very close with and they're not dying, right? I'm not dying. Nobody's going to die, hopefully. But you know, it's like a 10-hour drive and I'm like, oh, it's the end of the world. And I'm never going to find this again. And my sponsor reminded me that when I shut the fuck up and get out of God's way, God shows up. And my experience has shown me that, right? Like every time I manipulate a situation to fit my wants, I get miserable. And then every time I get out of the way and ask for God's help, God shows up and I'm okay, right? The big book tells me that just as I do that I think God would have me, does he enable me to match calamity with serenity, right? And my outsides have been on fire for a long time, right? My daughter is 3 years old now. And for the most of that 3 years and even the 6 months before that, my life has been on fire from the outside. You know, the drugs and the trap houses and the blah, 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 and all this stuff. And like through all of that, I've been able to walk through without thinking about drinking even once, right? Not once through all of some of the hardest things I've gone through in my entire life have I thought a drink is going to solve this. And I don't know about y'all, but like drinking solved the problems I created by drinking. Like that was my solution to every single thing I ever faced. I was like, oh man, I woke up in jail and they're going to let me out. I need to go get drunk about this. like every single thing that happened, I needed to put a substance in my body to feel even remotely okay. And through all of this, paper's gonna blow away. Through all of this, I haven't thought about it once, right? It has never crossed my mind as a serious thought to fix my outside situations. And I'm blessed beyond my wildest dreams, right? If you had given me that list of things I wanted when I first got sober, it would have been like money and cars and house and like all this material shit. And like what I found is I have a nice truck, right? I live in a nice house right now. I live with my in-laws. And I have all this material stuff and none of it matters, right? I've had a lot of material stuff for a long time and I've been miserable with all of that stuff, right? What I found is like the promises in the book tell me that I can walk through life on life's terms and not get drunk about it, right? I can show up for people in ways that I've never been able to show up for people before. You know, my mom is very, very strict religious Baptist Christian, and my brother came out as transgender a couple years ago. And that's been really hard on my mom, right? Their relationship is gone. My brother will not call my mom anymore. They don't speak. And I've been able to show up for both of them in different capacities, right? Just placed in a position where I can be of service to my family, right? At holidays, I spend time with my brother and we go hang out because my mom's whole side of the family is Baptist, religious, Christian, right-wing conservatives. And they're like, we don't understand a thing you're saying. And my brother feels like an outcast in his own family. And so me and my oldest brother will take him and we'll hang out with him for a few hours every holidays whenever we're there and just make him feel a part of as much as we can, right? And my dad does a great job of that too. And then I get to show up for my mom and be like, look, you don't have to understand it. You know, something my sponsor pointed out to me when it first happened, right? Because I don't understand it. And he goes, cool, how much experience do you have being transgender? And I said, well, none. And he goes, cool, then why do you fucking have an opinion about it? It's none of your business, right? Show up for your sister as best you can. And like, that's the position that I've been placed in today, right? Is like, I have no opinions on outside issues. And if I do have opinions on outside issues, I don't have to tell you what they are, right? It doesn't matter, right? I'm not here to tell you how I feel about politics. I'm not here to tell you how I feel about religion. I'm here to tell you my experience, strength, and hope as it relates to getting and staying sober. And I've been through a lot of things in sobriety, right? Like a lot of things. And through everything that I've been through in sobriety, God has put people in my life, people in my path that have been able to help me or help me get out of me. And I can't even express how grateful I am for this program, right? I haven't cried at a meeting in a long time. Like Rich used to get on my fucking nerves. He asked me to sponsor him and I wanted to say no, right? But I've always been taught like you don't say no to shit like that. And he asked me to sponsor him and I was like, fuck man, we work together. I don't want to work with you 6 days a week instead of five. But I said yes, right? And I learned a lot from Rich. I learned how to answer the phone when I don't want to. I learned how to wake up and be on time to things that I don't want to be on time for. Let's see what I learned how to fish. No, but I've seen a lot of people come and go, right, in my short time in the program. One of my best friends, the first guy who ever got me excited about recovery, like having fun sober, is doing 5 years in prison right now. He's one of my best friends. And I remember he was down in Prescott. He had a couple years sober and he went back out because he was doing something similar to me, right? He was looking on Plenty of Fish to get laid. And he walks into this girl's house and she has a fucking meth pipe sitting on her table. And he's like, well, I'm here. I might as well. And so like 9 months later, he caught a bunch of felonies and he's doing prison time. And he's been down for a couple of years already. And I've been messaging back and forth with him for the majority of the time that he's been in prison, right? And over the last year and some change, he got sober, right? He was using when he got in there. And he was using for a long time while he was in there. And he has over a year of sobriety now, right? And I've been able to be a part of that through the phone. And I can't even fathom getting sober in prison, right? That sounds insanely difficult. And he's doing it, right? God showed up. I send my higher power down to prison all the fucking time to hang out with that guy. And then something I challenge any of my sponsees to do is invite God into everything. Good, bad, indifferent, right? I invite God. My sponsor pointed out that I don't do well with change. Good, bad, indifferent, right? I got married and moved into a new house that my mother-in-law bought me within like a month of each other. And my sponsor was like, man, you need more meetings. And I was like, what are you talking about? My life's going great. And he's like, yeah, but that's a lot of change for somebody like you. Good, bad, indifferent, right? Things change. I need to double down on this. And so something that I challenge my sponsees to do is like, I don't care if you're going on a date with somebody that you've been trying to go on a date with for a long time. Like, bring God. I don't care if you're moving into the job of your dreams. Bring God, right? I don't care if you're miserable and you're facing a prison sentence for a probation violation for being out past curfew. Invite God, right? I invite God into everything that I do in my life, good, bad, indifferent, right? Before I moved, I drove for a living. I was a delivery driver for a company called Mission Linen. And I would have a minimum hour drive to my first stop every day of the week. And I would spend at least half of that drive hanging out with God in my box truck. You know, I killed 3 elk in the last 2 months and I invited God to come hang out with me and the elk. And what I've found is, right, this has gradually become a working part of the mind. I don't have to force myself to pray anymore, right? In early sobriety, I struggled with the God concept, right? I was like, I was sure somebody at some point was going to tell me to believe in Jesus. I was convinced of it. And what I found is nobody has ever told me that. In fact, my sponsor is very against the Jesus idea. And over time, I've developed this conception of God. You know, We Agnostics tells me that my own conception, however inadequate, is sufficient to make an approach and a beginning. And over time, my conception has become when I pray, God shows up, right? I don't know what God is. I don't know what God does. I don't know what God looks like. I know that when I pray and when I try to do what I think God would have me, my life goes smoother, right? It doesn't matter what my outsides look like. It really doesn't. Everywhere I go, God is right there, right? If I'm going to something heavy, like every single time I had court, I would send God to my courtroom like 3 weeks before the court date. And I'd be like, listen, I need you to go scope the place out, hang out there for a little bit, and I'll meet you there, all right? But I also need you here with me at the same time. So, like, can you juggle that? And the more often I do that, the more happy I am, right? The more often I spend time with God in the morning and, like, get right with God in the morning, the smoother I can walk through life and the more, like, genuine happiness I feel, right? I've been suicidal while holding my infant daughter. She was maybe 6 or 8 months old, and I was holding her in my arms while she was sleeping, and I wanted to die. And at her third birthday, I was overwhelmed with gratitude, right? Because I've been able to show up for her, and God willing, she'll never have to see me loaded, right? She's been in situations that I would have felt uncomfortable in, and I'm not the one who did that, right? And, I remember getting a suggestion about this resentment I have against her mother, right? You should pray for her. And like, I tried that when I was still really, really resentful at the beginning. And I was like, I pray that she gets everything she fucking deserves and blah, 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 blah. And I was like, whoa, I'm not going to do that for a while. And after our last trial date and leading up to getting our decision that we won the case, right, I found myself praying for her without forcing myself to. Because I've done all this work, right? And I've been out of self and I'm meeting with sponsees and I'm like doing all these things and like that resentment just kind of quieted down. And over time it got quiet enough that I have found myself able to pray for someone that I still kind of resent, right? But I also understand where she's coming from, right? Kids can't get you sober. The first time I had a pregnancy scare, I fled the state because I wanted to keep getting loaded. I was like, I'm moving to Colorado. And then he was a stillbirth, and so I moved back to Arizona because I didn't have to deal with it. And, like, I understand to the fullest extent that there is nothing outside of myself. Children, parents, family, probation, jail, none of it is enough to get me sober, right? The message that can get me sober needs to have depth and weight, and it needs to be founded in spiritual principles. And so I have a lot of empathy for where she's at. And what I found over time is like that empathy is starting to outweigh my resentment. And I didn't think that was possible. And I can't attribute that to anything but God, right? So, yeah, I'm really grateful to be here. I really didn't want to drive all the fucking way back from California to be here for this. I'm not going to lie to you guys, right? We got out there. We've been having fun all week. And then Friday rolls around, and I'm like, I got to speak on Sunday morning. So I woke up at 5:45 in the morning on Friday, and I got in the car, and I just drove. And I drove by myself, and I invited God into the car, and we hung out most of the way down here, and we're probably going to hang out most of the way back. So thank you so much for listening to me, and that's all I got.